Hey everybody, it's Jeff. If you've been listening for long, you know that here at Your Move, we are all about helping people make better decisions. In fact, did you know that adults make an average of 35,000 decisions per day? Big or small, decisions add up, and they play a huge role in where you find yourself right now. And that's why we created the Your Move app, a destination for better decision-making that puts you on track for your desired future. Your time, your money, your happiness, it's all on the table. Download the free Your Move app for on-demand access to Your Move episodes, application ideas, and ways to connect further. Search for Your Move with Andy Stanley in the App Store to get started. We really do believe that the next 30 minutes will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So today, we're going to continue with Andy's second message in his four-part series, Your Move. Every decision you make becomes a permanent part of the story of your life. In this episode, Andy explains how to make your story one that you want to tell.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Your Move. If this is your first time to watch our program, you should know that we're all about helping you make better decisions with fewer regrets. And in fact, today we are continuing a discussion on the subject of decision making. After all, life is all about decision making, isn't it? I mean, think about it. You are where you are, for the most part, because of decisions you've made. In fact, my hunch is your greatest regrets are connected to decisions you've made. We can all think of a few decisions we'd like to go back and unmake. Compounding all of that is the fact that most of life's decisions are made in environments that are very, very emotional. There are no emotionally neutral decision-making environments, are there? In fact, it's often our emotions that get us into trouble. For example, have you ever made a really bad relationship decision? A really bad relationship decision? At the time, it seemed right. You were in love, or you were in lust, or you were in something, and whatever it was, you were in it, and it was emotional, wasn't it? And your mama tried to warn you, and your best friend tried to warn you, but to no avail, because you were sure that he was Mr. Right, and she was, well, she wasn't Mrs. Right, and she wasn't even necessarily the woman of your dreams, but she was fun to look at, and you enjoyed making your friends jealous. No harm in that, I guess. But looking back, you think, what was I thinking? I should have known better. I should have listened. How about this? Have you ever made a really, really bad purchasing decision? Yeah, we all have. We've all made bad purchasing decisions. And looking back, again, you just shake your head and think, what was I thinking? What in the world was I doing? And then there are the decisions that we never imagined we'd have to make, the unanticipated decisions in life. How about this one? Have you ever had a friend that was bad for you? We call those toxic relationships. You like them, but unfortunately, you're becoming more like them, and you don't like what you're becoming. And then somebody comes along and they say, hey, I don't think he's good for you. I don't think she's good for you. And then you have a decision to make, don't you? A decision you don't really want to have to make. As we discussed last week, the other thing that makes decision making so important and so tricky is that we never know what hangs in the balance of our decisions. In some cases, it takes a lifetime to know what hangs in the balance of a decision. In some cases, it takes an entire generation to know what hung in the balance of a decision. Think about it this way. Think about how different your life might have been, or how your life would have been shaped if your parents had decided just a few things differently. Think about how different your life would be if your grandparents had decided just a few things differently. Imagine what your life would be like if your parents hadn't split up. Imagine how different your life would be if your parents had split up. The point is this. We never know what or who hangs in the balance of the decisions that we make. But what we do know is this, and this is so important. Private decisions always have public ramifications. Your private decisions probably won't remain private. Your personal decisions will impact some other persons. So, in this four-part series, we're discussing four questions that are going to help empower you to make better decisions and, as I said, live with fewer regrets. Now, last week I gave you the first question, and if you weren't able to be with us last week, or if you didn't know there was an us to even be with, I'm going to repeat it for you in just a minute. But just so you'll know, if you'll go to yourmove.is, you can actually download our free Your Move app that'll allow you to watch last week's episode as well as all of our Your Move programming. And here's the best part. It is for free forever. No thank you note necessary. Anyway, back to our topic. Last week, we gave you the first question in our four questions that we're going to talk about as it relates to decision making. And the first question we ask is, am I being honest with myself, really? You might remember that. Am I being completely honest with myself, really? Now, for you to feel the full weight of this question, I need you to ask the question out loud. So I want you to repeat after me and say it out loud. And like we did last week and like we do just about every week on Your Move, when you talk out loud and you're all by yourself, it feels a little bit weird. If you're watching the Your Move broadcast with friends, you're going to be tempted to just roll your eyes or maybe worse, change the channel. But just hang with me, humor me. I want you to ask this question out loud because the power is found in hearing yourself ask this question. So here we go. The question is, am I being honest with myself really? Ready? All together. Am I being honest with myself really? One more time with feeling. Ready? Am I being honest with myself really? Now, that's a really, really important question because when it comes to selling ourselves on bad ideas, when it comes to selling ourselves on bad decisions, we are all professional salespeople. When it comes to convincing ourselves to do the wrong thing, we are experts. We all are. Consequently, we need to get in the habit of asking ourselves this very, very important question. Why am I doing this really? And that brings us to our second of four questions that we're going to talk about in this series. And the second question is this. What story do I want to tell? What story do I want to tell? And yes, I want you to say it with me out loud. Ready? Everybody together. One, two, three. What story do I want to tell? Now, here's something to think about, and I bet you've never thought about this before, but think about this. Every decision you make becomes part of the story of your life. Every decision, in a similar way, every season of your life will be a chapter in the story of your life. And here's how it works. You make a decision, and every decision you make has an outcome. And the outcome of every decision you make becomes part of the story of your life. The good ones, the bad ones, the expected, and the unexpected. You know, it goes kind of like this. You went out with him and he was a jerk. And now part of your story is that you wasted a year or 2 years of your life dating a jerk. You made a decision. There was an outcome. And now it's part of the story of your life. Or how about this one? Your boss asked you to lie to the client. And you lied, and the client called you on it, and your boss laid the blame on you, and you lost your job. And now part of the story of your life is that you decided to lie, the outcome was you got called out on it, and part of your story is you lied to a client, and you lost your job. Every decision and the outcome of those decisions become part of the story of your life. And you know what that means? It means that decision by decision, you are writing the story of your life. Perhaps like some of my friends recently, you lost a job. And surviving this season of life without a job is going to be a story that you tell someday. Now, right now, you're in the middle of it. And it's so traumatic and you can't imagine how things are going to work out. But you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, the story of having lost your job is simply going to be a story that you tell. So here's the question. What story do you want to tell? Do you want to tell this story? I lost my job. I was so embarrassed, I started drinking too much, racked up a bunch of debt, lost the respect of my wife and my kids. That's not the story you want to tell. Maybe you're married and things aren't going so great at home. And there's this guy at the office and he's so nice. In fact, he's way nicer than your husband. And he's made it clear that if you're willing, he's wanting to take the relationship to another level. And to be honest, because of what's going on at home, sounds a bit exciting, but before you dive in, remember this. Whatever you do, regardless of the circumstances at home, regardless of the pressure, regardless of the messages you're telling yourself, and regardless of what everybody else is telling you, whatever you do, it becomes a permanent part of the story of your life. So again, what story do you want to tell? Do you want to tell this story? I wasn't happy at home, so I got involved with a guy at work, lied to my husband, lied to my kids, lied to my mother, lied to my mother-in-law, lived for a season with lots of guilt, got found out, got busted, lost my marriage, lost the respect of my children. Now, come on. Is that really the story you want to tell? Now, here's the thing. We've never met, but here's something I know about you. You would like to be able to tell your entire story without skipping any chapters or having to lie about the details, right? Isn't that right? You would like to be able to tell your entire story and never have to skip a chapter and never have to skip a detail. Someday, you would like to be able to sit down with your kids or maybe even your grandkids, to sit down with your kids or grandkids and tell your entire story. You want to be able to sit down someday with somebody you hope to spend the rest of your life with and tell your entire story. You'd like to be the hero in your story. We all want to be the hero in our story. And going forward, you can have that. But it's going to be required of you to stop mid-decision and ask this important question. What story do I want to tell? Or which of the available options do you want as part of the story of your life? Now, one reason this is so hard, and I think one reason we don't think about this, is that when we're in the middle of making a decision, it's easy to get distracted by the pressure and the emotions that we feel. In some cases, it's like we sort of go into a fog. We get so focused on what's happening right in front of us, right around us, that it's easy to lose sight of the broader context, our story. You know how it is. Often you're up against a time deadline, either at the clock or the calendar. We got to decide. You got to decide right now. Oftentimes, fear is a part of the equation. If you don't marry me, I'm leaving, you know, and nobody wants to be left. Or if you don't make your quota, you're fired, and nobody wants to lose the job. When you're forced to make a decision under a deadline or with that kind of terrifying consequence or pressure hanging over your head, it's hard to think about tomorrow. Now, if you're in retail sales, you totally get this because you know about the worst thing you can do is let a potential customer leave the store or the showroom without making a sale. And why is that? Here's what you know. You know that once they walk out of the emotional setting of the store, you know that once they leave the car lot, you know that once they get out of the vicinity of your sales pitch, you know that the attachment that they felt to your product begins to lessen, begins to wane. They gain perspective. They are far less likely to make a purchase. Experts tell us that there's something else that happens in our mind. Whenever our appetites are engaged in a decision-making process, we fall victim to a cognitive bias called focalism. Focalism is easy to understand. If you have ever been in love, you have been a victim of focalism. When this occurs, everything except the thing we're fixated on kind of gets blurred out by comparison. This is why the first time you fell in love, guys, all you could see was her. All you could think about was her. Everything else seemed to fade. Guys, this is why when you drive around, all you see are Ford F-150s because that's what you want. Everything gets blurred out. In comparison, we hyper-focus. Again, we get locked into options. The big picture, the story of our life, is the furthest thing from our minds. Now, in most emotionally charged decision-making environments, we think in terms of choices, not stories. And that's what makes this question so incredibly important and so powerful, because it draws us out of the immediate and it focuses us on the eventual. It empowers us to put the decision-making process within the broader context of the story of our lives. This is why every decision you make in the future needs to be made with this question in mind. What story do I want to tell? Now, obviously, we are not the first generation to wrestle with this. There's a familiar story in the Old Testament about a young Jewish boy who approached a similar situation like the ones we've been talking about. And he's an extraordinary example of this because of what he models. And as we're going to see, he models a specific application of this idea that is so helpful. Honestly, I just can't wait to tell you about it. But first, a little context. Around 1850 BC, a teenager named Joseph, the son of Jacob, who was the son of Isaac, who was the son of Abraham. Did you follow all that? No, okay, doesn't matter. Anyway, Joseph is one of 11, soon to be 12 sons of Jacob. But as the story goes, his brothers were extremely, extremely jealous of him. And they were jealous of him because his daddy, Jacob, loved him, Joseph, more than he loved any of his other sons. So one day, Joseph's brothers, the sons of Jacob's second favorite wife, they see Joseph headed in their direction, and they decide to act on what they've been feeling for a very long time. And they decide to kill him. They decide to take Joseph's life. But apparently, as Joseph got closer, they lost their nerve. And instead, they throw him in an empty well until they can get the nerve to do away with him permanently. And you thought your older siblings were merciless. Anyway, you actually may remember this story from childhood. If so, you'll remember that Joseph gets a break. As it turns out, slave traders come by on their way to Egypt, and Joseph's brothers decide that selling their brother would be more profitable than killing him. Oh, the mercy. So they sell him to the slave traders, and then they tell their parents that their brother Joseph was killed by a wild animal. Now, of course, this breaks their parents' heart, and it really broke their father's heart. And now they have a secret that they're forced to live with for the rest of their lives, which makes them, and don't miss this, which makes them liars for life. Now, back to our big idea for just a moment. If we could have dropped in on Joseph's brothers, while they were contemplating how to channel their intense jealousy toward their younger brother, and if we were able to ask them, hey guys, what story do you want to tell? Before you do something rash, do you really want your story to be this? Well, when I was in my mid-20s, I was so jealous of my younger brother, based on the fact that my father loved his mother more than he loved my mother, and therefore loved my younger brother more than he loved me, which, come to think of it, really doesn't have anything to do with my younger brother, who I hate, because none of this is really his fault. But anyway, when I was in my mid-20s, I hated my younger brother so much that I sold him into slavery and then told my daddy he was killed by wild animals and broke my father's heart. And then I spent the rest of my life lying about what happened to him, all because I was mad at him for, well, honestly, I was just jealous. Hey guys, is that really the story you want to tell? Anyway, as the story goes, Joseph ends up in Egypt on the auction block, and he's bought by a man named Potiphar. Now, Potiphar just happens to be the captain of Pharaoh's palace guard. And now Joseph has a decision to make. Do I run away? Do I do what most slaves do, which is basically do as little as I possibly can with as bad an attitude as I can possibly maintain or get by with? Or do I throw myself into this slave situation with everything I've got? Before long, Potiphar notices, and he begins giving Joseph more and more responsibility. In fact, the writer of Genesis describes it this way. Check this out. He says this. He said, so Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except for the food that he ate. Now, so far, so good. Good decisions, good outcomes, good story. But at this point in the story, if there were a soundtrack, it would change because things begin to get really, really interesting for Joseph. As you may know, in spite of Joseph's diligence, actually because of his diligence, he finds himself in a no-win situation where he's forced to make yet another decision. But this time, he's faced with two options, neither of which could lead to a good outcome. And here's the setup for what happens next. Imagine the soundtrack change right here. Now, Joseph was well-built and handsome, and we can see it coming, can't we? Check this out. And after a while, his master's wife, Potiphar's wife, took notice of Joseph, and she said to him, come to bed with me. Now, this is so fascinating. Joseph is far, far, far away from home. He's probably 19, maybe 20 years old. It looks from all practical purposes as if his God has abandoned him. He's in a foreign country. There's no accountability. And now his boss's wife wants him to go to bed with her. And he knows there's a lot at stake. And he has a decision to make. And the scripture says this. It says that he refused. Now, what Joseph does next is something we should all do. Here's what he does. Joseph begins to rehearse his story out loud. He doesn't allow this powerful temptation or these terrible circumstances to overshadow the broader story of his life. Instead, he views this dilemma within the broader context of his story, which is what we've all got to learn to do. This is such a powerful idea. Joseph actually reviews his story out loud in front of Potiphar's wife. Allow me to paraphrase. His story goes something like this. Mrs. Potiphar, I came to this land as a slave. I had absolutely no rights and I had no future. Then your husband purchased me and he treated me like one of his own. He treated me with kindness and he gave me the opportunity to serve him and to serve the family. I've worked hard. I've done everything you've required of me. And with God's help, with my God's help, I've worked my way to the point where your husband trusts me. Look, he's put me in charge of his entire household. And then he says this, and I quote, he says, with me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. Look at this. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. Implication, Mrs. Potiphar, that's your story. You really need to think about this. Do you really want affair with Jewish slave on your resume? You sure you want that as part of your story? And then Joseph asked an amazing question. In light of all that's happened, in light of all that your husband has done for me, in light of God's confidence in me and God's grace to me, how then could I do such a wicked thing against God? In other words, do I want my story to be, your husband gave me an opportunity I never dreamed would come my way, so I took advantage of his generosity and I took advantage of my position and I took advantage of the influence that your husband gave me and I slept with his wife, dishonoring both him and my God? The author of Genesis continues. Now, this is amazing. He says this, and though she, Potiphar's wife, and though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. But this was humbling to Potiphar's wife. This was actually humiliating to his wife. Chances are she'd slept with many of her husband's slaves. And so she accuses Joseph of trying to rape her. Now, Potiphar's in a really tough situation. He really has no choice but to respond to his wife's accusation. And so he punishes Joseph. Now, I think, this is just my opinion, I think the fact that Potiphar's wife didn't have Joseph executed immediately, and I think the fact that Potiphar didn't have Joseph executed immediately tells us that Potiphar probably didn't even believe his wife, but his hands were tied. He had to do something. So he has Joseph thrown into prison. Interestingly enough, he has him thrown into the prison where Pharaoh kept political prisoners. Now, in spite of this big setback, the writer of Genesis says something interesting. The writer of Genesis says that the Lord was with Joseph, that the Lord was with Joseph. Now, I think this is so strange because you would think that if the Lord was with Joseph, none of this would have happened to begin with. If the Lord was with Joseph, he never would have been kidnapped by his brothers. If the Lord was with Joseph, he would have never been put in a pit. If the Lord was with Joseph, he would have never been sold as a slave. And if the Lord was with Joseph, once Potiphar showed him favor, certainly he would continue to live in Potiphar's house and prosper. But then Joseph's story isn't over, is it? And here's something you need to think about. Regardless of what you're going through right now, regardless of how bad it is, your story isn't over either. Now, while in prison, Joseph does the very same thing he did when he was in Potiphar's household. He does his best, and over time, he wins the favor of the prison ward. After he'd been in Pharaoh's prison for about 2 years, there are two men that are put into prison. Each one of them has a dream, and they find out that Joseph is a dream interpreter. And so Joseph correctly interprets each of their dreams, and what he predicted came true. One of these men is restored to his position as Pharaoh's cupbearer, just as Joseph predicted, and the other one is executed, just as Joseph predicted. Joseph is thinking, this is my ticket out. Once he's restored to working for Pharaoh, he even says to him, hey, when you are restored to your position, please tell someone that I'm in here and I'm in here unjustly. But the scriptures tell us that he forgot Joseph, and two more years go by. And chances are Joseph had no doubt resigned himself to the fact that knowing the prison warden, having favor in the eyes of the prison warden is as good as it's ever going to get for me. And then everything changed. Everything changed because Pharaoh had a dream. He had a dream that he believed had significance for the entire nation of Egypt. But none of his magicians could interpret his dream. And suddenly the cupbearer remembers Joseph and he goes to Pharaoh and he says, Pharaoh, I was sort of hoping you forgot about this, but sometime in the past, you remember I fell out of favor with you and you threw me in prison. And while I was in prison, I met this Jewish boy and I had a dream and he interpreted my dream and it came true. And I know you've had a dream and no one could interpret it, but I have a feeling if he's still there and if you can find him, if you bring him out, this young Jewish boy may be able to interpret your dream. So Joseph is brought before the monarch. He interprets Pharaoh's dream, and Pharaoh sees in Joseph, just like everyone else had seen, a man he could trust. Potiphar would vouch for him. The prison warden would vouch for him. Joseph's reputation was spotless. His track record was impeccable. He had nothing to hide, nothing to be ashamed of. And in the end, Pharaoh actually makes young Joseph the prime minister of Egypt, his primary responsibility being to store up enough grain during the coming 7 years so that Egypt could survive the famine that had been predicted in Pharaoh's dream. Once again, Joseph fully embraces this opportunity. And 7 years later, a famine devastates that entire part of the world. Nothing would grow. People in the surrounding regions begin to starve. But in Egypt, thanks to Joseph, there was a surplus of grain, enough to sustain both man and beast. Joseph's family eventually came to Egypt to buy grain. And in one of the most dramatic stories maybe in history, and one of the most dramatic stories certainly in the scriptures, Joseph introduces himself to his brothers. And you can only imagine what they felt in that moment. They were terrified because they assumed that what they had done to Joseph, Joseph would in turn do to them. But Joseph wasn't anything like his brothers. Joseph had decided many, many years earlier to live a story worth telling, and he didn't want revenge to be part of that story. So in addition to rescuing the nation of Egypt from the devastating famine, Joseph actually rescues his brothers and their families, and he moves them all to Egypt, where they settled permanently as guests and relatives of the prime minister, their brother. Now, before we leave Joseph's story, I want you to think for a moment about the contrast between Joseph and his brothers. His brothers had a story that they spent their entire life hiding, a story that made them, as we said, liars for life. Year after year, they had to continue to deceive their father regarding the fate of their younger brother. Joseph, on the other hand, had a story he was proud to tell. And it was a story he wrote one decision at a time. Little did he know, now this is amazing to think about, little did he know that literally thousands of years later, we would still be telling his story. Now, here's the thing I don't want you to ever forget. Here's the thing that I just don't want you to miss. Just like Joseph and just like his brothers, you are writing your story one decision at a time. Just think about that. Just like Joseph, just like his brothers, you are writing your story, the story that is your life. You're writing it every day, one decision at a time. And if you don't take anything else away from Joseph's story, I hope you will take this away. Don't ever make a decision. Don't ever make a decision that will make you a liar for life. Long after whatever you gained is gone, you will be left with your lie. It'll be a permanent part of your story, a permanent part of your life. You will be left with a story that you won't be proud to tell. So let me ask you, what story do you want to tell? And if you're in the middle of making a decision right now, let me ask you, which of the available options do you want as a permanent part of the story of your life? What story do you want to tell? Hey, thank you so much for joining us this week on Your Move. Next week, I'm going to give you a third question designed to help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. But until then, I hope you have a great and regret-free week. We'll see you next time right here on Your Move.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move. Don't forget to check out the new and improved Your Move app. Unlike most things in life, it's free. Take Your Move with you on the go and make better decisions a part of your everyday. More people and more cities making better decisions could change culture as we know it.